Welcome back to TRP.
I am delighted to be able to offer to you a chapter from Nicky Furlong's acclaimed book, Young Farmer Seeks Wife. Enjoy.
Chapter 2, The Case of the Tangler's Daughter. Before the advent of the cattle marts and civilization to Ireland, the country was not ruled by the government, the clergy, the Protestants, the Knights, the Freemasons or Fianna Fáil. No. It was run by a race of men known as tanglers. The term tangler is used to indicate that human being who was the link between the cattle dealer and the buying or selling citizen. He was at once admired and despised. The tangler was penniless, but beholden to his wealthy and mobile employer. Nevertheless, by virtue of his tongue and sales talents, he had the plain farmer vice gripped by the bags. He had the cattle dealer and rancher gripped by the like extremities. The tangler was motivated by the same urge as the Byzantine eunuch. His talent, wit and tongue were at the service of his overlord, a man he considered not fit to brush a bull's back. This factor made him range from a sweet-talking flatterer to a demon of spite. I see them now on the fair in my mind's eye. Brown felt hat, shiny brown boots, a ferruled ash plant, fawn pants, collar, red tie and tie pin. The ensemble covered in a natty gabardine coat, well cut and tailored. They operated in the following manner. Enter cattle dealer and tangler upon the site of a fair. The cattle dealer approaches the small farmer, sheltering his eyes humbly under a peak cap. The dealer says to the farmer, God save you, my good man, how much for the little cattle? Small farmer says, only £50 apiece, sir. The dealer pretends to take weakness. He staggers and moves away in a state of shock. The tangler shouts at the top of his voice, come back, come back! And sotto voce to the small farmer, leave this to me, James, you'll get your price. By noon, the little farmer has sold his cattle, the wife, the children and himself into slavery and delighted with the annual privilege. The second girl I had a notion of was the daughter of a tangler named Tom Boyle, tangler to Mr. John Redman Bow, a major cattle dealer of Ferrycarrig. She caught my eye. She was full of frolics and had a very nice laugh. What happier association whereby I could learn the trade, see the world, and maybe make a few notes for the home place and the mother. In addition, I would have the daughter Phyllis's animated prattle and hot cheeks, all in comfort. The place at home was only one jump ahead of the bailiff at the time. I made it up to meet her. The Uncle Dick was mumming at the time with the Drina Mummy and traditional dance group. I went with him to a mummer's ball at Carcur, where I got in tow with Phyllis. She let me walk home with her that night and introduced me to her daddy. He not only brought me in and gave me a mug of hot milk, but also informed me that all belonging to me were decent people, especially the Uncle Dick, who would give you his right arm. I hope, with the help of God, you'll take after him and be half as good a man, he said with a flourish. After that, I went with Tom Boyle to the fairs of Wexford, Clonmel, Carrig-on-Shore, Ballybricken, to Mon and Castlebridge. I studied his strategy very carefully. Before long, I was in a position to persuade the life belt off a sailor. I was also playing cards very well, and I got to speak the Tangler's language with fluency. I would go far in the world, was the opinion of Mr. John Redmond Bow, the boss. The mother had wintered 8 little whitehead bullocks on land which grew little more than rushes and rough grass. However, the trade was so brisk that anything that could walk was marketable. There was a hunger on the English for young cattle. Nicholas Hun, she said, send Mr. Bow over to me this week until I try his temperature. We'll put the cattle into the small house where they'll look big and will support one against the other in case any of them takes a stagger. A rub of hair oil on their backs to put them in show condition would be no harm either. Mr. Bow, the cattle dealer, came over to Mulgannon, and with him my friend and patron, Mr. Tom Boyle, the tangler, as bright as a buttercup in corn. "How much do you want for the 8 little bullocks now, ma'am?" asked Mr. Bow politely. The mother was blowing the fan. She commenced blowing it harder to indicate agitation. The sparks lodged and died on the soot over the heart. "I'm a poor widow, Mr. Bow," she said. "All I want is £54.10 apiece." Mr. Bow turned smartly around like a shot soldier, out through the half door and up the lane to the car. The tangler let out a screech. Come back here at once. The poor little woman is demented over the loss of her husband, and she's out of her mind and doesn't know what she's saying. Come back! Didn't she know fate? She asked £10 over their value, and the 8 of them wheezing like concertinas. Mr. Bow turned to me quickly, then out of the corner of his mouth. Are the sound? As sound as the National Bank, I said, not going to let the mother down. They came to terms, but Mr. Bow told Boyle that it would be his funeral if anything happened to the cattle for the next 7 days. He was referring to their health. They were driven away and put out on fresh grass, a thing their stomachs had no experience of. 2 nights later, I brought Phyllis to see the last of the Mohicans, and afterwards I brought her for some fish and chips. We took our time going home. The Boyle home lay up a hill overlooking a scene of beauty. At this location, the broad and pleasant Slaney bursts from its narrows into Wexford's inner harbour, and it gurgles between 2 fortresses, which would laugh at the Rhine's best efforts. As we walked along with the vista proclaiming the inadequacy of mortal chat, we had peril thrust upon us. There was her father out waiting for us on the road. He had a horsewhip in his hand. I could plainly see him flexing like an unleashed greyhound. His 3 dogs were all jumping and howling around him, waiting for the word to attack. The prospect was not concerned with the kind word. Boyle's bitter face presiding over the scene confirmed my fear. I stopped dead. He turned to me and addressed me in a half wail, which started off at a low pitch and went up to sawmill howl. 3 of them down with the murrain, God blast you. 2 of them et with flukes. 3 more rotten with consumption. I will take your sacred life. He took to run at me, dogs and all. I had to run across the fields like a badger with the dogs at my heels and he making cuts at me with the whip through the frost. The panting man of 58 years of age followed me across country and at one stage his hot breath was on the back of my neck. I turned out of the fields at Carry Graveyard, forded the little river in my best clothes, ran down by the hospital, up the Windmill Hills, over to White Rock and across the land to Mulgannon. And Thomas Boyle, Esquire, plus dogs, only gave up the chase through exhaustion at White Mill. I fell into our own yard, safe only when greeted by our own dog and the gate locked. Here at last, behind our Siegfried line, I could afford impudence. It took me 24 hours to recover. Phyllis never spoke to me again after that. Her last words to me were, "You have deceived my daddy. He is made a hunt of before the people." The mother had her money, of course, and didn't give a damn. "Caveat emptor," Mrs. Furlong, the solicitor, said. I often think, looking back on the case, that I was thwarted by the mother. The conclusion of this alarming experience afforded me a distraction of mind from romance to male companionship. Besides, there were other interests in the world to which I wished to give attention. I have always been a great man for politics, the international scene no less than the national. This interest stems from a day in the Christian Brothers second class when I told my deskmate Desi Carroll that I was up for the British in the war and who was he up for? He informed me that the British were no good and that he was up for the Germans. I decided that I would be up for the Germans too. From that moment, I was never deceived by Mr. Churchill's assertion that Britain fought for the freedom of the world. And I was quick to note that if the Germans occupied most of Europe, the British occupied civilizations thousands of miles away, like India, Malaya, Egypt, Gibraltar, Burma and Persia, not to mention the six counties. I was to collect evidence to support my point of view by means of newspaper cuttings, which I carefully entered into scrapbooks. If the rest of the world was to be codded, I most certainly was not. Mr. MacDonough Sr., my companion's father, was a meticulous record-keeping man. We often had discussions. He collected the London Illustrated News, the Irish Times, the Financial Times, Hibernia, and the Messenger of the Sacred Heart. Mr. MacDonough was concerned lest the Protestants get the upper hand in business. If a scarce commodity was to be obtained in Wexford, he, Mr. MacDonough Sr., noted that it was not the Catholic firms that displayed it, but other parties. He eschewed Fenianism nevertheless. He mentioned his complete collection of the London Illustrated News of 1942. I must confess that I was overwhelmed with desire to convert to my own use this most interesting set. It so happened that I met an impure companion on the Fair of Ross during my tuition with Mr. Boyle. He gave me a calendar of 12 pages, a page for each month. On each page of which there was an unchaste picture in colour. I brought this to the attention of MacDonough Jr. and indicated that he could have same in return for the 1942 issues of the London Illustrated News. I allowed him to view Miss January. MacDonagh Jr. indicated that much as he would like to oblige me, his father would break every bone in his back. Even a loan would not suffice, for he suggested that I would allow droppings from my porridge to fall on the pages. I pointed out that if that was his attitude, it made no odds to me. MacDonagh said that he would return in 1 hour, but stipulated that the exchange would have to be a loan for 1 week. I was agreeable to this on condition that Mulcahy not be allowed to see the unchased calendar in case he might turn into a goat. At this time, the mother purchased a van for the sum of £145 from Ibar Maguire in the Rope Walk Yard. There was nothing wrong with it. We brought calves and pigs around in it, and I learned how to drive. I wouldn't always be under a compliment to Mulcahy for being driven around in his father's car. These unconnected matters were destined to play an important role in my life and business.
Please tune in to our next episode.